This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Margaret O'Brien is in her second term in the State House. The Republican represents Portage and the surrounding area in the 61st District. She's not running for that seat again because she's seeking the state Senate seat, which includes all of Kalamazoo County. Thank you for being here.
It's my pleasure to be here with you again.
And we're also joined by Alex Mitchell of the Kalamazoo Gazette.
Thanks for having me, Gordon.
Margaret O'Brien, why don't you begin by telling us a little bit more about yourself and why you're running for state Senate?
Well, thank you. The biggest reason I'm running for the state Senate is it's about our community and our larger community, which would be the state of Michigan. My family's been here for a number of years, and I've grown up here. I'm a lifelong Kalamazoo County resident, and I've seen when the economy was good, how wonderful things can be. But I've also seen that when the economy has suffered, that there's a lot of people who go through trials and troubles and they struggle. And it's really important that we have policies that really reflect the people in our state. And so when I look at the decision that I made to run for Senate, first I had to ask for my husband and my two children for their permission to run, because while I may be the one serving, they're the ones who often suffer the consequences of not having me at home. Once they gave me the blessing, I looked at this election, and it's really about, in my eyes, leadership and results. Who has a history of getting results that are positive for our state? And who has the leadership that's willing to jump into tough issues and tackle them? And I think that between my time on the council in Portage and as a state representative, I've been willing to deal with those tough issues that our community has brought. And so I thought, combined with my passion and family history being here in Kalamazoo, I want to bring that type of commitment to state office.
Alex, first question for Margaret O'Brien.
Margaret, when you voted against a minimum wage bill recently signed by Governor Snyder, you said that the bill missed a meaningful opportunity to help struggling Michigan families. Can you expand a little bit on what opportunity you feel was missed?
When we look at minimum wage is meant to be an entry point, a starting point into the job market. It's not to be a staying point, and minimum wage was never meant to support a family, because again, it's meant to be a temporary point in a person's employment. And my concern was, so much of the conversation was about minimum wage. We have to make sure it's high enough to support a family. Having grown up in a family that was poor, minimum wage doesn't help you support a family. Being able to gain further education, more job training opportunities so you can earn your way up that employment ladder, that's what helps move a family out of poverty. My mom and dad both made minimum wage. What would have helped them would be job retraining, more education, not just saying, let's increase the minimum wage. To give you an example, when I was in high school, minimum wage was, if I remember correctly, less than $4 an hour. Well, today it's $7.40. We haven't eliminated poverty, yet it's almost doubled. And so I wanted to make sure that we talk about minimum wage gets your foot in the door. But if you want to be able to care for a family, we have to spend more time on education and training opportunities so that people can move up that employment ladder and they can take care of their families over the long term.
There have been statistics showing that those workers who are working minimum wage jobs now, however, are on average a lot older than they were perhaps when you were in high school, when I was in high school. You've got more people into their 20s and 30s and maybe even beyond working minimum wage jobs. Does that make your point, or does it perhaps indicate that we've got to rethink how people are paid for various jobs?
Your example there makes my point. It's about the broader economy. And we suffered over an 8 to 10 year period, severe decline in Michigan. And in fact, Michigan has added a few hundred thousand jobs over the last about 9 months. We're on the comeback, but we were in a pretty deep hole from the recession. And Michigan was leading the nation in exporting our young people out. In fact, for 13 years, the United Van Lines does a study, and they had Michigan as a high outbound category, which means we were sending more people out of the state than coming back into the state. Additionally, Michigan was the only state in the nation that in the census lost population. That shows you how bad our economy was. For the first time, we have gained population in the state of Michigan, and United Van Line survey has shown us as a stable state. So we have many years in which we need economic recovery. Now, over the last couple years, We are tied for first in the Great Lakes for per capita income growth. We are seventh in the nation for per capita income growth. So we're trending well. But the job's not done. We have to look at those 20 and 30 year olds and saying, why are they making minimum wage? There's two big issues. One is we need more jobs in the state of Michigan. So we have to make sure we have the policies that promote job growth. Second, what skills or education are they bringing to the table? Are they attributable to the skills and education that's in demand? My kids are going out into the job market. They just graduated high school. They've had their part-time high school jobs in the past. And when I'm talking to employers, they are saying they need specific skills in their workplace, but they can't find the workers who have them. So let's look at what's in demand and make sure that the students who are coming out of high school or college, that their skills are in alignment with those demands. Because I have one child who's starting a job today making more than minimum wage. And then my other child's in a very volatile market, retail, where, you know, there's a lot of turnover. They're making minimum wage. So let's help point people in the direction where they can move up that ladder and command higher than a minimum wage.
Are you suggesting you'd like to see perhaps more vocational or skills-based training at the high school or possibly college level?
More skills training is essential to our state. When I've talked to Stryker and some of the other manufacturing companies in this town, they are saying the skills that they need do not require a college degree, yet the high school students aren't coming out of school with those skills. I was talking to the Van Buren Intermediate School District superintendent, and they've seen about a 25% drop in their vocational education program because the rules became so stringent at the state level of what every student had to graduate. No longer could you use vocational education to meet certain math or science requirements. And these are students building robots. They're designing them for a specific function, and they are creating, they're doing every step along the way, yet that doesn't count towards science or math. And we passed in the House a Michigan merit curriculum change that would allow for more flexibility. It does not dumb down the standards at all, but it allows for more of the integrated education. Those kids who are building these robots, they're doing physics, calculus, and other aspects, but yet the credits count for none of those. And so we have to do more to bring that back. My brother, he went to the Navy and became a nuclear reactor operator. And he went through the Skills Center, or the Vocational Center in Van Buren County. And today, he's a nuclear reactor operator. He commands a high salary. He never had to go to college to get that job. So that's what we can bring back to our youth who are saying, maybe I'm not ready for college right now, or I want to get right into the workforce upon graduation. Let's help give the schools the tools they need so they can adapt and provide that education.
If I can just kind of wrap up the minimum wage conversation, do you think that the state should have a minimum wage? And if so, where would you place it if it were just simply up to Margaret O'Brien?
I had a minimum wage bill that I had introduced, and I had introduced an $8.20 minimum wage, and I had kept a youth minimum wage because, interestingly enough, youth have about 26% unemployment. And if you can't get your first job, you're going to struggle to get a second and third job, which may be why some of the 20 and 30-year-olds are still stuck in minimum wage jobs. They couldn't get that first job as a 16-year-old. And so I do believe that we're going to keep having a minimum wage. The federal government requires it. Let's have it. Let's raise it. Let's allow for an inflationary index, but not every year. The bill that passed had it every year. Think of the chaos that causes the business owner as they're trying to do payroll. They're constantly having to change everyone's salary constantly, not just by an increase to reward you for good service, but because the minimum wage keeps moving. So we definitely should have it. We should increase it. But this was not the right proposal that'll be good for the hardworking people who are struggling.
And what would that youth minimum wage be?
Under my proposal, it was $7.40. But under the Senate proposal, it's 85% of the minimum wage. But the 85% has to be able to meet first the minimum federal minimum wage.
Alex?
Speaking of job creation, you talked a little bit about, you know, training, vocational programs. When you first announced, you said it's important that we do more to create jobs in Michigan. Outside of training and vocational programs, what can be done to create more jobs?
Look at the last 3.5 years. When I took office in 2011, I knew there were tough decisions to be made. In fact, Michigan couldn't even balance a budget on time. When they did manage to pass a budget at the deadline that the Constitution sets out, it was often cut midstream because they had passed a budget they knew wasn't sustainable. So the first thing we did was pass a budget early June, and it was sustainable. We had to do no mid-year cuts. The second thing we did was eliminate the job-killing Michigan business tax. We had small mom-and-pop stores were being taxed twice. Can you imagine that? You're taxed on your gross receipts, even if you didn't make a profit. And then if you did make a profit, you were taxed again when it flows to your personal return. And that actually caused less investment in our local communities. Third is for every new regulation that was passed, we eliminated over 10 regulations. So we eliminated regulations that no longer mattered in today's workforce. And so it's about having a stable, predictable environment for job creators, the people who take a risk out there. If you think of somebody that you know, I'm sure that you have a friend who has 3 or 4 employees in their business. For them to hire one employee is a great financial risk. It's not like a larger corporation, because in a small company, if you hit bad times and have to lay somebody off, you've shared an office space, you've looked them in the eye, you probably have met their kids and their spouse, and you have to tell them that they don't have a job. So when a small company hires people, they are invested in that person. They never want to be put in that spot. And so it was really about helping them to be able to do job creation. And we've seen it here in Kalamazoo County. We have a can-do attitude. And in Kalamazoo, we have a 6.6% unemployment rate. In the nation, it's 6.7. And in Michigan, it's over 8%. We've been able to do that to allow entrepreneur growth, which is those small businesses. And we need to have the right blend of big and small business in our state. We've had ribbon cuttings with Newell Rubbermaid out at the Tech Park. I'm going to be going to a ribbon cutting later today. We've got a lot of small and large businesses that, because of the predictability and understandable, transparent tax system, that they're growing jobs in Michigan.
Do you support the plan which is on the August ballot to phase out the personal property tax?
Yes, the personal property tax has been a very regressive tax because it really targets one sector over another. If you're in manufacturing, if you're Pfizer, Stryker, or a printing company, even a small mom and pop printing company, just one piece of equipment, you pay substantial taxes on it. So it actually was causing disinvestment in our state. Why would you buy new equipment if you know your taxes were going to go up, even though every day your equipment's devalued? So I definitely support it. I encourage people to contact me or any of your legislators to understand more about the proposal. I'm sure there'll be a media campaign. Learn about it. We have to eliminate it. We got to keep Michigan competitive with the rest of the country. We're in a global world.
Are local governments going to be held harmless here, more or less, with revenue? Because that's the concern they have, is they rely pretty heavily on the revenue from this tax. Does this proposal, in your opinion, adequately address those concerns?
Yes, what's being placed on the August ballot, we work very closely with our local townships, cities, villages, counties, and all of their associations signed on to this proposal that is on the ballot in August. So we were able to work intently with all of the stakeholder groups to come up with a very fair solution that we think can balance the need to eliminate the personal property tax, but also work to hold harmless our local governments.
This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. We're speaking with State Representative Margaret O'Brien of Portage. She is running for the Republican nomination for State Senate in the district, which will include all of Kalamazoo County. Also here is Alex Mitchell of the Kalamazoo Gazette. Alex?
Margaret, another thing you mentioned in your announcement was that you're someone who's willing to work across the aisle. A recent example of that would be your House Bill 5223 that would clarify teacher evaluation standards that you're co-sponsoring with Adam Zemke, if I said that correctly, a Democrat out of Ann Arbor. Could you possibly mention some other areas you'd be willing to work across the aisle if elected?
I'm always willing to sit down at a table and talk about any issue. There were quite a few people who were shocked when I introduced my own minimum wage bill because they thought, why would I introduce this? And I said, because I wanted to have a conversation centered around what's best for our state. And when you can work across the aisle, you can then have a very healthy debate and discussion about what's best for our state. I've done it on a number of legislation. In fact, when you look at the legislation that I have worked on the last 3.5 years, it's been bipartisan. Physical therapy, it's sitting in the House right now. I worked in the last 3.5 years with it, both Democrats and Republicans, and we look to have a physical therapy bill signed into law. That's been a 20-year battle. And it's about doing it the right way, not about making it about yourself. It's about a better Michigan. I look, as you mentioned, my education bill. I asked Representative Zemke to come on board before I even knew what he even thought about the concept. Because when he got elected, I asked him, why did you run for office? And he said, education. I love education. I thought if somebody has that passion that motivates them to run for office, I want them at the table because we can work out our disagreements. I've also worked on a central registry bill, which is a very technical bill that most people don't know about, but it impacts so many people, some negatively, some positively in our state. I worked with Representative Robinson, the most liberal member of the House. I worked with her closely on that bill, and it got signed into law, and she attended the ceremonial signing. Adoption, Representative Kosowski, Democrat, who I worked with closely. I can go on and on. It's really about you as a person. The political party isn't going to solve your problems. You got to look to individuals to lead. And I've never been afraid to lead. And if I make a misstep, I'm never afraid to apologize or to rethink and to look at new information. If we're unwilling to sit down with somebody who might have a little bit different perspective, then how's that good for our state? So I'm all about working with people on both sides of the aisle.
Well, let me talk about something which is perhaps a little more partisan. And I should note, we're speaking on Monday, June 9th, coming off a weekend when there was a lot of discussion about some of your colleagues in Lansing having their picture taken with fashion magazines open and saying, yes, we understand women. And it's no secret the Republican Party is trying to close something of a gender gap, especially nationwide. As a Republican woman, when you see your colleagues take a picture like this, which was obviously intended to be a joke, but I mean, what are your thoughts on that? Does it show that they need to take a little more care before they have their picture taken?
Well, in this multimedia age, it is always good to evaluate what you want to be seen doing. It doesn't matter if you're a man or a woman. I am so grateful growing up that I did not have YouTube or Facebook or any of these things because kids could be kids. And you could do a fun joke and then realize it went bad and you didn't have the whole world talking about it. And so today we are under scrutiny. So everyone, man or woman, needs to make sure that they're always being relatable and that they're not doing something that might unintentionally offend. You know, there was a counter photo that was tweeted, which I found also objectionable, that said real women read bills. And I thought, I've never seen four women crammed into a bench reading bills. I read bills at my desk, on the House floor, in my office. So that's what we want. So now we're using women as props. That's where, as a woman, I'm extremely uncomfortable with what's happening in the media or in the talking points of the various political parties. I am not a prop. I am not a political tool. I'm just like you two. I'm a person. It shouldn't matter that I'm a woman. I'm vice chair of tax policy. I care about more things than just fashion magazines, which women buy, and those magazines were given to those men by a woman. And I care about our whole state. Why am I limited to just a couple of issues that I'm supposed to care about? And why am I supposed to only think a certain way on certain issues? I have never seen one of my colleagues, who was a man, vote on a bill and people say, well, gosh, they're anti-man. I don't hear about it. So I'm extremely uncomfortable that a woman are being put into this little glass box and they're supposed to perform a certain way and they're all supposed to be the same. I'm just as different from the woman next to me as you are from the man next to you. And when I think about controversial issues, I think about healthcare. More women die of heart disease than men. There's more research dollars spent on men's health than women's health because, you know, women's hormones change throughout the month. So when you look at where real things impact women, it's often what we never see in the public eye. I think of every 10 autoimmune diseases that are diagnosed, 9 are to women. Where's the outrage over issues that happen to your sister, your wife, your mother, your daughter? But instead, we want to sum up women over a glamour magazine or abortion. You know, those are not things that are on my mind every day. It's about making sure that my daughter has the same belief in herself that my son has in himself and making sure that we all have access to primary health care. Those are the things that I worry about. And I'm very uncomfortable with women being put in a box.
Alex?
So it sounds like you're saying that while this may have sprung from a joke that was in perhaps poor taste and got out of hand, Do you feel it's at least sparked a healthy conversation for us to have about women's role and how they're viewed in politics?
I always embrace debate. Where I'm uncomfortable is the negativity and trying to say that one person's better than another person. We should, yes, talk more about women's role in the world, but let's treat each woman as an individual and not as one collective interest group, because we don't hear people say, let's go out and get the man vote, but yet we hear, let's go get the woman vote. And so I embrace the debate. But I'm going to tell you, Margaret O'Brien is Margaret O'Brien. I can't be Lisa Lyons. I can't be Rashida Tlaib. I'm me, and we're all different. So please treat us all different and don't expect us to all be the same flavor.
As I'm sure you're aware, there was going to be another candidate in this Republican primary for state Senate, former Representative Lawrence Wienke, who right before filing deadline decided to run as a Libertarian. At the time, he cited the Republican Party's stance on gay rights as the main reason that he was switching parties. What I want to know from you is, do you view this as an ongoing, the gay marriage issue in particular, an ongoing debate that the Republican Party is still having? Or is the Republican Party pretty settled here? And if someone like Lawrence Wienke is totally uncomfortable with that position, perhaps he has done the right thing by joining a different party.
What's really behind this is, how do we talk about issues that are deemed controversial? Gay people are the same type of person as you and I. Just like women have been put into a glass box, I think gay people have been put into a glass box where they're treated as something different than just an individual. We do need to talk about gay marriage. We need to talk about discrimination. But we need to do it without rhetoric and without disrespect. And that's been the real struggle if you look over the last few years as this issue has come up more and more. The people who command all the attention tend to be the people who are extremely militant or who say the craziest things. The people who want to sit down at a table across from somebody who has a different opinion than them or has an idea they want to approach, that's kind of boring. And so that's often ignored. We need to talk about these issues, but if all we're going to do is throw rhetoric out or disrespect, it will never allow for solutions to be found. So I do believe we need to deal with some of the discriminatory issues that we have out there, but let's sit down and really talk about the differences, how you can find solutions, what are different options. You know, throwing rhetoric or disrespect out there, it's never going to move a ball down the field. It's like throwing a Hail Mary on every play. It might work once. It'll never work every time.
Do you think that the state's Elliot Larson Civil Rights Act should be amended? Governor Snyder says he wants lawmakers to discuss this. Amend it so it includes protections for sexual orientation. Would you be in favor of that?
I definitely want to talk about it. I can't tell you what I would or wouldn't be in favor of, because I want to sit down and look at all of the issues. Speaker Bolger has talked about this a lot, and I think he's right on the fact we talk about differences of religious views, but we also talk about sexual orientation. Everybody deserves to be respected. What is the best way to provide the protections that people need? In real estate, I've never asked somebody if they were gay, not gay, if they were married, not married. For me, it was about the information they felt was important that I needed to find them the home they wanted or to help them sell their home. And in my profession, we're not to discriminate. And so for me, I never asked people what their value systems were. I was just there to serve. And I think we need an economy, a job market that's similar to that. But how do you cross that line? I can't tell you if somebody is or is not straight or gay unless they tell me. And so that's where we need to look at, what do the employers think? Because they don't want to be in a position of asking questions that they shouldn't be asking in an effort to not discriminate. So how do we find the balance? Let's talk about it. I'm open for the conversation, and I want to be at the table.
Apparently, gay marriage is going to be settled, at least in terms of Michigan and the federal courts. But as you look back now at 2004, when this came in to being through a state constitutional amendment voted approved by voters, do you think that the voters perhaps acted in haste? We always hear about, amending the Constitution is a big step. Well, is that maybe the lesson here, that, 10 years later, there seems to be some different views in the state? Who knows what would happen if we voted again? But I'm wondering if we look back now on that vote and view it somewhat differently through a prism 10 years later.
For me, I look more at how people handle a topic when talking in the public eye or in debate. And perhaps what's been most uncomfortable to me is when we have the rhetoric thrown out from people on either side of the issue. That's where I've been extremely uncomfortable with. The courts are going to decide on gay marriage. If they strike down the constitutional provision or the constitutional amendment, then we need to be ready to have a discussion and talk about what are possible solutions, what is something that's right for Michigan and her citizens. And we have to do it where we're being respectful. So probably my greatest regret is that when we talk about controversial issues or seemingly controversial issues, my regret is when disrespect enters it and we treat people like talking points rather than the people that they are. And that's where I want to stay focused. And I've hoped that over the last couple of years, that's what I've shown is when colleagues of mine have said things that I thought were not respectful to people, that I stood up and said, I don't think that's right. We need to respect all people and just debate where we might differ.
Do you still think that marriage should be between one man and one woman? Is that where you are?
That's where I'm at, is marriage is between one man, one woman. I am open again, though, to sitting down and talking about what are ideas, solutions. I can't tell you where I will land because this is such a hard issue, especially when you have your faith interfaced with it. But I have to tell you, I have a beloved family member who is gay. I have a really good friend who's gay. I love them dearly. So you see, many of us have, in essence, a clash of here's the people we love and here's the faith tradition we grew up into. And this is where they're clashing. And how do we sit down and handle that? And that's where we need to get the rhetoric out of this issue. We will never find solutions when we allow political or partisan rhetoric to dominate the debate. We need to sit down. There's a lot of people like Margaret O'Brien who say, gosh, my faith tradition's colliding with people I dearly love. Let's talk about this in an honest and genuine way, absent of politics.
This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. We're speaking with State Representative Margaret O'Brien. The Portage Republican is running for State Senate for the seat which includes all of Kalamazoo County. Alex Mitchell of the Kalamazoo Gazette is also with us. Alex?
Margaret, if I can move back to Lawrence Winkie for a moment. When he made his announcement that he was going to be running as a Libertarian, it caught a lot of people off guard, including Congressman Fred Upton, who said during an interview with the Gazette that he thinks Mr. Winkie's decision hurts your chances in November because it'll draw voters from the same pool. Were you caught off guard by his decision to run as a Libertarian at all? And do you agree with Congressman Upton that it could hurt you in November?
You know, first, let's understand this is one of the most competitive Senate seats in the state. So this was going to be a hard election, no matter who was in. But for me, I didn't worry about who is the person that might be running in the primary or the general election. I believe that I have a message that I want to give to voters, which is a can-do attitude, one that's been built on results in the House, with leadership in the House. You can lead on tough issues, even if they're not, don't seem to be part of your party's platform. You can still be a leader on these issues. And so when he decided to become a Libertarian, obviously conventional wisdom will say it may pull from the Republican ticket. But when you look at the issues he's running on, I would argue those aren't Libertarian issues. That isn't, the Libertarian Party doesn't want government deciding anything. And so I can't tell you where the votes would be pulled. Maybe it's more in a different direction. For me, I want to show that this election is about being respectful of all people in our community, all people in our state, and let's look at the records of everybody in the race. I'm the only one that has a record of real results across the aisle, and I'm the only one that doesn't go out and spew partisan political talking points. I have been with my party when I agree with them on the issues, but there have been tough issues where I've said, no, I don't think that's the right policy, and I voted against them, even though it may have given me political benefit. I'm about what's best for my community and state.
One of the interesting things, of course, about Lawrence Winkie running as a Libertarian is it's out of your control. But it's interesting that the Michigan Campaign Finance Network has been analyzing the advertising for the governor's race and the U.S. Senate race so far, and they concluded that the candidates are almost bystanders at this point, that outside groups are pouring a lot of money in. This state Senate district has been one where that has happened in previous elections because, as you say, it's one of the more competitive districts in the state. How much do you concern yourself about that? And do you think there are things that candidates can do to try and limit that or discourage people from pouring a lot of money in from outside interest groups?
Well, I tell people when I knock on doors, because they'll ask, Margaret, you just robocalled me. I said, oh gosh, if I robocalled you, you're going to get my voice. When I do a robocall, it's going to be clear that I paid for this and I authorized it, whether it's a telephone town hall or it's a political robocall. You're going to know it was from me. And there's already been outside groups who've already tried to weigh into this, saying, you know, spreading that propaganda that women can only think one way. And apparently I'm anti-woman, which I think is disrespectful to me as a woman. There's going to be those outside interest groups. I can't worry about them. I can't think about them. What I have to do is continue to listen to my community. What are their concerns? What are their issues? And put my best foot forward. This is who I am. I want to be transparent, approachable, and honest with you. I don't want to dance around the answer or dance around the questions so that people can make the best choice possible. Do I worry that my message may get lost in people who have hidden agendas? Absolutely. But that's where I have to work harder and I have to be stronger because ironically, the same people who say that they respect women aren't a full out assault to me because I'm a woman who may disagree with them on one issue. I have a harder road as a woman because the bar is set higher and I'm just ready to meet that expectation. And I'm just going to show everything that I can about what I'm about. So you can make the decision of, do you like what Margaret O'Brien has to offer versus is she a woman or a man? I want you to look at my record, look at my message, and decide if I'm what's best for this community.
Alex?
As we wrap things up here, can you speak a little bit just about, obviously you have a contested race coming up this fall in the primary and then in the November general if you make it there. You had another opportunity to run for the state house. Why did you choose to take the leap at the Senate here instead of run for your third term?
That was such a difficult time in my life when redistricting happened and Senator Shoemaker was in essence drawn out of her seat. I started getting a lot of calls asking me to run for Senate. And mind you, this was in my first term when the districts were redrawn and I made no commitments. I just stayed silent. I did a lot of prayer, talking with my family. And what made me finally decide to jump in was I was watching just the political partisanship and I hate it. We can debate the issues and show how two people are different without being disrespectful, without lying. And that's what made me decide to jump in. Senator Shoemaker has done a great job being a public servant to this community. And that's what I see myself as, a public servant serving this community. And I want to continue that tradition. And I have worked without boundaries. When I look at my district, Kalamazoo County is my district. I have worked in partnership with the speaker in his area. I've worked with the city of Kalamazoo leaders to work on legislation that's important to them. Got two bills passed for them that needed to be done. I've worked with Representative Nesbitt, who has a portion of Kalamazoo County. It's been all what's good about our county. My family's lived here my whole life. In fact, one of my ancestors is Titus Bronson. So I figure I haven't been run out of town yet, so I'm good. But this is where I grew up. This is where I chose to raise my family. This is where I'm praying that my kids will stay. So for me, it was that love of my community and desire to keep partisan politics out of our community why I'm running. I just want to serve and I just want to sit down with anyone, regardless if we agree or disagree, and talk about how can we work together? What can we agree on? And if we can't agree on some items, how can we set those aside so that we can continue to work on the other areas where we agree?
Let me ask you about one more issue, decriminalization of marijuana. Do you agree that's a good idea? And how would you go about doing it if you wanted to move ahead?
I want to look at that slippery slope. We have medical marijuana. I have worked in strong partnership with my colleagues on both sides of the aisle to make sure that we allow that to happen legally and make sure it's safe. Where I worry is if we totally decriminalize it, I worry about how that affects driving. How do we make sure that, you know, like we saw with drunk driving when I was growing up, that was starting to come on the radar about don't drink under the influence. Well, we haven't had conversations about what's the influence of marijuana on people when they drive. are there long-term impacts on a person's health like there is with smoking? Growing up, we didn't talk about that either. And now we know the harmful effects of smoking. So I want to ensure that as we talk about marijuana, I mean, we don't need to be putting people away forever from marijuana, but how do we make sure it's in its right place, but it's not unintentionally causing long-term health implications or worse, that somebody's out on the road driving under the influence. So I want to talk more about the issue. I don't have a specific solution yet, but I want it to encompass everything, both short and long term, because we really don't want people who have smoked some marijuana to end up in our prison system where it costs $35,000 a year to harm them. We need to save those slots for dangerous people, but we also don't want to unintentionally have policies that allow for long term harm as well.
Margaret O'Brien, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Margaret O'Brien is a state representative. She her district includes Portage in the 61st State House District. She's running for state Senate for the seat, which includes all of Kalamazoo County. And we also want to thank Alex Mitchell of the Kalamazoo Gazette.
Thank you, Gordon.
This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.